Hello, my name is David Cycleback. I am a cognitive scientist and philosopher at the Center for Artifact Studies. Sixth in a podcast series on brains, thinking, and the nature and limits of knowledge, this episode is called Neurodiversity and is about the theory and movement called neurodiversity. Neurodiversity is a complex subject with many objectively unanswerable questions. There is a wide variety of views and approaches to the topic, including from those in the medical field and amongst the mentally ill and their advocates. As is the case with many social movements and theories, there is also some controversy and strong disagreements. You are welcome and encouraged to think about the topic and the issues, perhaps research it more, and form your own opinions. I'll start with the obvious question. What is neurodiversity? Neurodiversity is a recent theory, movement, and cause that wishes to reclassify mental illnesses and conditions, not as mental illnesses and conditions, but as natural neurological variations in thinking. The supporters see human thinking as a broad spectrum of variations, and many of what are currently called medical conditions and illnesses are actually natural variations that happen to fall outside of the so-called normal parameters of thinking as defined by society. This movement has traditionally been associated with autism and the autistic people's advocates, but it has been broadened to include many other different ways of thinking, including dyslexia, ADHD or attention deficit syndrome, bipolar disorder, anxiety disorder, PTSD or post-traumatic stress syndrome, and schizophrenia. There are a wide variety of different reasons, and different neurodiversity advocates will have different and different degrees of reasons for supporting neurodiversity. The key reason is the genuine belief that many ways of thinking that are now pathologized, meaning treated by the medical community and society as diseases or errors, are really just different legitimate ways of thinking. Psychiatry and medicine has traditionally treated, say, Asperger's syndrome or mild autism as a disease that must be cured or fixed, meaning they pathologize it. However, neurodiversity advocates do not see it that way. They say the different way of thinking is perfectly natural and not something to be cured. And while medical conditions and illnesses often involve various mild to severe functional issues and troubles that most believe should be treated, this idea that there are different than normal but legitimate ways of thinking is true. Many medical conditions and illnesses involve both functional deficits but unique, positive, and practical skills. All forms of thinking, and most everything, including normal ways of thinking accepted by society and tradition, have trade-offs, good and bad, positive and negative aspects. And of course, what is good and bad, positive and negative, is subjective and in the eye of the beholder, and often depends on the situation and context. Some Asperger and autistic people have great skills at mathematics, focus, and pattern recognition, and the great scientists Paul Dirac and Isaac Newton were autistic. Being autistic was integral to their academic success. When the autistic person's special needs are accommodated, tech businesses have discovered that the autistic have unique skills that normal people do not have, such as processing data and pattern recognition for a software company. In fact, some autistic people have said that the others at their companies are the impaired ones, not them, as they can focus and work straight through undistracted, unlike other people. Dyslexia involves difficulty in reading and working with numbers. However, it is also associated with skills at big picture, holistic thinking. My father was dyslexic, but he was also a science professor. He had to be careful when writing down numbers, including on the classroom chalkboard. However, he was known by his colleagues for his ability to see the big picture. The Nobel Prize-winning mathematician John Nash was schizophrenic. This caused him great social and functioning troubles, including dropping out of society, hallucinations, delusions, and being involuntarily hospitalized. However, he said when the bad effects and delusions were under control, his unique way of thinking contributed to his mathematical discoveries. Many famous scientists, academics, artists, and thinkers have had mystical experiences that influenced their work and worldviews, including Richard Feynman, Jane Goodall, Albert Einstein, Huston Smith, Walt Whitman, and Wassily Kandinsky. As covered in episode number one of this podcast, mystical experiences are neurological events where the brain's functioning changes and sensory information is processed in an unusual way. Bipolar disorder, which is a genetic and brain chemistry disorder that at its extremes can cause psychoses and hallucinations, is generally associated with high intelligence and creativity. And numerous great artists had it, including Van Gogh, Beethoven, Virginia Woolf, Kurt Cobain, and Edward Munch. Munch said, "I cannot get rid of my illnesses, for there is a lot in my art that exists only because of them." I note here that I am type 1 bipolar, and have been since I was a young child. While it has posed numerous challenges that have had to be addressed and overcome, I like the way I think, and it has been an aid in my success academically. When I was younger, my engineering professor said to me, "You have a strange mind." He followed that up by saying that as a professor, he meant that as a compliment, and that I thought about subjects that never even entered most people's minds and saw topics from unique viewpoints. It didn't surprise him that I became a philosopher. Artists Vladimir Nabokov, Franz Liszt, and Duke Ellington had synesthesia. Synesthesia is an unusual condition where one sense is simultaneously perceived as another sense, often multiple senses. For example, a person with synesthesia may experience sounds or letters or numbers as a color, smell, or even a flavor. What is interesting here is that the synesthesia and the mystical experiences are not considered a mental illness, but an unusual but natural condition. This illustrates how an abnormal way of thinking is not always pathologized or considered needing of a fix. Some of the things I listed are pathologized and considered detrimental, while others are not. Similarly, over history, certain what are now considered perfectly natural things, including homosexuality and being left-handed, were once pathologized and looked to be cured. Homosexuality was illegal and people tried to medically cure it, while students were sometimes forced to learn how to be right-handed instead of left. So the question of what should be pathologized and what should be considered perfectly normal and fine has long been a topic. And there are clear areas where there are things that have been pathologized and considered illnesses that should not have been and no longer are. And of course, normal people have different ways of thinking, different talents, deficits, different intelligence levels. And in a group, having people who think and perceive differently is considered a great advantage. Variations in thinking and ways of thinking are standard and accepted. I am certainly not saying that someone who has a mental illness or condition has no troubles and there are no issues. People who think differently can be as dumb or silly or as wrong as normal people. And mental illnesses and conditions often involve serious symptoms, deficits, and issues. Paranoid schizophrenics and people in manic phases can have clearly delusional thinking. However, people who advocate for neurodiversity believe that thinking differently isn't necessarily a deficit. It may involve problems and issues and side effects that must be addressed, but the different ways of thinking should be respected and appreciated. being bipolar, I say that my different way of thinking and perceiving isn't better or worse than the normal way, just different. However, having a different way of thinking and perspective has served me well, and I consider it a great positive. Part of the neurodiversity movement is to remove the social and personal stigma of having conditions. It often is considered a human rights or social justice issue, where the mentally ill should be considered whole people with the normal human rights and considerations. They often consider it important for a mentally impaired child to grow up with self-confidence and feelings of self-worth rather than being cataloged as less than normal. I've often said that the best thing you can do for a child, no matter who they are or what condition they may or may not have, is to teach them self-confidence. Another aspect of neurodiversity advocacy is about treatment, social, business, educational, organization, and theory. Many feel treatment of many conditions should not be about eradicating the condition or disease, which may be impossible anyways, but to look for more humane, accommodating ways of addressing the conditions. Working to alleviate bad symptoms while preserving and embracing the different ways of thinking. Rather than trying to persecute and fix conditions, neurodiversity advocates say that if students and employees with conditions are treated as different and unique people, but with great potential skills, it is better for learning and the world, makes for better people and more productive companies, schools, and societies. And as we all know, normal people have different ways of learning and working, and making everyone work and learn the same exact way is problematic for everyone. I've worked with museums and know the museums intentionally design exhibits and educational programs to cater to people of different ways of learning, people with different abilities and disabilities, and people with different socioeconomic, ethnic, and educational backgrounds. Museums know that people learn and experience in different ways, and museums want to be inclusive. So then, what are the controversies about neurodiversity ideology in the movement? Though much of what I've said so far may seem reasonable to you, and you may wonder what is the controversy, there are various controversies involving at times dichotomous ways of looking at the issue. One controversy is the very idea and debate over whether conditions should be treated pathologically, as illnesses and or mental deficits, or instead be classified as a natural and fine way of thinking. People disagree about this, often strongly. You likely have your own opinions on the matter. Some believe that autism, for example, is a genuine mental illness and a deficiency that should be treated as such. These people search for cures and want it eradicated as one would want to eradicate cancer. In extreme cases, kids with the condition are depicted as stolen or damaged. On the other side, others say that they are not mentally ill. There's nothing to cure, and some go as far as to say that there should be no research into causes and chastise parents of autistic children who search for a cure. Some advocates and autistics in this camp can be zealous and treat people who believe differently derogatorily. These two camps, especially when zealous about their beliefs, come into conflict. For most people, however, there is a shared middle ground. Some may label autism a disease or mental illness, and others strongly disagree with that labeling, but they all agree that the autistic should be treated well, accommodated, given education and work situations that cater to their disabilities and help them thrive. Most people also say there is no one-size-fits-all theory or rules. The mentally ill are individuals, and cases and needs differ from person to person. There are high-functioning autistic people who do well in school, hold fulfilling jobs, and have satisfying social lives. However, there are autistic people who have severe issues, including the inability to communicate, function normally, and have great social troubles that cause them unhappiness. Certainly, both camps believe in addressing and fixing many of those issues. A neurodiversity advocate would have to be a true zealot to say those issues shouldn't be addressed and fixed. Those saying everything about autism and bad and must be fixed, and those saying that there's absolutely nothing wrong with autism and there's nothing to be addressed, lay at the extremes. Most people fall in between these two camps and regularly have common ground. An important thing to discuss, and a source of much philosophical and political conflict in this area, is about functioning and society. As discussed in episode 1 of this podcast series, humans have evolved as a species to think in a particular way in order to function and survive as a species in their particular physical and social environment. Part of this functioning and species survival is about social groups and working as groups and relationships and societies. Humans are social animals, and their brains have evolved to think and act in a social environment. And people who think differently, the mentally ill and people with severe conditions, often have issues with fitting in society and in functioning. This can range from being weird and not fitting into and having troubles in social situations to people who have serious functional issues, unable to hold a job or stay in school or be unable to communicate and even function in their day-to-day lives. Even famous different thinkers had functional issues. Paul Dirac, who was autistic, required his wife to take care of other things so he could focus on his work. He was one of the great scientific and mathematical intellects of his era, widely acknowledged as an academic genius, but needed assistance to live his day-to-day life. He was well known for his social and socializing deficits. And of course, many great thinkers and artists, Van Gogh to Jean Genet, were outsiders to society. Van Gogh had troubles with relations and fitting into society, while the great French novelist and playwright Jean Genet had long-time troubles with society, including being imprisoned and living as a quote-unquote deviant as defined by society. This also points out that societies and cultural norms are about functioning, about the functioning of the society, and not about many other things such as knowledge and new information. And in fact, the powers that be are often scared of and suppress new knowledge, ideas, and information that may cause troubles with the social norms. Scientists with new ideas, inventors, original artists are almost by definition people who think outside the normal. And of course, many great scientists, thinkers, and artists have long gotten into conflict with society, from Galileo to Socrates to Caravaggio. So functioning and fitting in with society is a constant issue, a real issue, and one to be considered. These issues here are a big source of conflict and debates. It can often be political in how one views the individual versus the society, the benefits to society versus the rights of individuals. As my time is nearly up, I end up by saying that this has been a very brief introduction to the topic of neurodiversity and a cursory overview of some issues and topics. Neurodiversity is a theory and movement that wishes to reclassify mental illnesses as natural and fine ways of thinking. And in fact, different ways of thinking involve both positives and negatives, deficits and unique skills. And this is even for normal thinkers. How to consider and define mental illnesses and disorders, what language to use, how to treat conditions, how to organize society, workplaces, and educational systems are ongoing debates and will be for a long time. Your input is welcome. It is also important to note that, as with any demographic, there is a wide variety of opinions, views, and philosophies amongst the mentally ill and people with conditions. There is no single view, no one voice, And part of respecting and understanding any demographic is to know and appreciate that there is a wide variety of views, opinions, and philosophies. And whatever one's stance on the topic, part of the neurodiversity movement is about understanding and welcoming that people have different ways of thinking and different ideas, viewpoints, and perspectives, which I think most of us agree is a good thing. My name is David Seichelbeck. Thank you for listening.